White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And also now by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorendo, a book about back when Auburn football was awesome, way back in the past. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we are here to talk about a leaky boat by the name of Auburn football. And we've got quite a bit of stuff to get through tonight. I feel strongly that tonight really should be a listener-driven show. I think we've got probably a good number of listener questions just based on what I've been seeing on Twitter the last 48 hours or so. So I really would like to focus most of our time on digging through listener questions. I have a feeling that they're asking a lot of the stuff we would talk about anyway. So we can kind of skim through our usual outline, of course.
But we could go straight to listener questions and then clean up after that. I'm fine with that.
Like it. Yeah, I do like it. But before we do that, I have a statement. I have something akin to a hostage video that I have to get out there. I'll be blinking SOS as I record this. And that is simply this. I want to make this clear up front, okay? My opinion on the current state of the Auburn coaching staff and the Auburn program has fundamentally changed since Friday. Okay, I am not now where I was Friday or before. Now, my tweet about that, which has gotten nearly 7,000 visual impressions on Twitter, which is insane and just shows you how apparently people – I don't understand why people are just so fascinated with my particular views. I have no power. I can't hire a coach. I can't fire a coach. Neither can you. But for whatever reason, I guess because we're visible, right? People are interested. And so I just want to make clear that my position has changed. Now, this is not about me. I just want to say this up front, and then I'll be done with that. But the whole thing is not about me, but this part is. Because what I think doesn't matter at all. My opinion doesn't mean anything. I have no power. It's just one man's opinion. That's all I've ever offered. But I want to clarify, because of my own poor tweeting skills or because people jump to conclusions or both, my views have been mischaracterized over and over since last season started going bad. I have been called an apologist for Gus. It's been said that I've made excuses, that I would defend Gus under any circumstances, on and on and on these things have been said about me. It's led to me blocking as many Auburn people as Alabama people, which makes me kind of sick to think about, but I have. What I was doing up through the beginning of this season was being realistic. What I was saying was not apologies and it was not excuses. I was defending the current staff against accusations made based on too small of a sample size in a season when so many uncontrollable things went wrong last year. My position has never changed. I still believe the same things I've believed all along. What has changed are the circumstances. what was an unreasonable conclusion that some fans were drawing weeks or months ago is, in my opinion, now less unreasonable. Our current staff, John, has become less defensible. In other words, I defended the staff before because we did not know enough to condemn them, in my opinion. There was not enough evidence at the beginning of this season, even after Clemson, to condemn them. I think that now we have evidence that could be used that way. We now know enough that defending this staff and this head coach from this point forward would be doing the things I was accused of before. It would be making excuses. It would be being an apologist. I was not that before, but from Saturday forward, doing the things and saying the things I was saying before now would fit that category. I therefore no longer feel justified in saying those things, and so my views have not so much changed, but the situation has changed, and I am adjusting my position to it, if that makes sense. So, was I apologizing for Gus before? No. Am I condemning him now? No. What I'm doing is I'm saying I thought many Auburn fans were being unrealistic, but now their views against him are no longer so unrealistic because now we actually have some evidence in that direction. In no way does that invalidate my earlier points. It was too soon to think and say those things before, and thus it was counterproductive. We just didn't know enough yet. Now, do I want Gus fired? No. But I am no longer standing four square in the way of the crowd that does want him. I am acknowledging that they have a point they did not have before Saturday. Does that clarify things?
It does. I want to be clear about this. You have moved from a position of 100% support for Gus based on the evidence that we had.
Yes.
To a position of Gus has screwed this up some and you're unhappy. There's a spectrum of fan happiness from, you know, bliss and everything's perfect and don't change anything. And the other end of the spectrum is fire everyone right now, this second, okay? And we were close to the middle of that spectrum, you know, before. And you've just moved a little more on that spectrum toward the negative end. You are not at the fire everyone now. You are just less on the everything's great, keep everybody end of the spectrum.
I now feel like there is justification for the people that don't want him around anymore. I'm not one of them, but I understand now. I mean, I can sympathize now, whereas before I thought it was just ridiculous and premature.
I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay. And how? How so?
I think, I mean, again, everybody's opinion is their own. If you think, if any one Auburn fan thinks that Gus and his staff should be fired, that's their right to believe that. And I understand it because I'm pulling my hair out watching these games too. At the same time, I don't think they should be gone. I don't believe that. I think if I was given all power over the Auburn football program tomorrow, mm-hmm. and infinite financial resources, I would not fire them.
Why?
Because, and now, I'm saying it's what I call Gus and Rhett into my office and say, what the hell are you doing? And ask some serious questions about the, you know, the Clemson game plan and some of the play calling and substitution patterns in this game. Yeah, I would, because it boggles the mind a little bit, and maybe there's things they know that we're not seeing. But I mean, again, I look at the big picture about what they've done, and I think that in the long run, Gus can still be successful at Auburn. And to me, the point where I would really like, oh my gosh, we have the point of no return. We have no chance to come back. Is when recruiting goes in the tank and we're getting the, you know, the 50th ranked class in the country or whatever, like we did at the end of Terry Bowden and at the end of Tuberville, honestly. And when we get to that point and we're getting left in the dust recruiting wise, then yeah, they got to go.
But when we're pulling in top 10 recruiting classes every year and the product on the field looks like we're getting left in the dust, like we're pulling in 70th ranked recruiting classes, what's the effective difference?
The effective difference is that the capacity to play better is still there. When you don't have the recruits, it doesn't matter who the coach is. It doesn't matter. If we had the 50th ranked recruits in the country every single year, then it wouldn't matter if we had, you know, Bill Belichick. But the recruits see something and they're still coming. Okay, we signed the 9th best recruiting class in the country last year. A bunch of Auburn fans would have fired Gus last year, but you know, we signed a bunch of high school recruits better than all but 8 other colleges in the country. Mm-hmm. This guy for SB Nation, Bud Elliott, does this thing every year where he looks at which teams have the right ratio of 4- and 5-star players to be able to contend for the national title. And this year, I went back and looked at it today, and there were 13 teams on that list, and Auburn was one of them. Okay? And that's it. That's the whole pool of teams that have, you know, really good talent. Now, for that amount of talent, should we be happy with the product on the field? No. No, we shouldn't. But I'll tell you this, too. This team, as screwy as the Clemson game was and as unhappy as I am with that performance Saturday night, this team is better than last year's team. Quantitatively, I could say that. Boom. I'm very serious about that. They are better. And, you know,
is the offense being run in a way that maximizes that potential?
No.
Okay. No. Are you confident that we will pull in a top 10 recruiting class at the end of how this season is going?
It depends on the noise in the media and how we finish and stuff, but we're on the way to doing that right now. Yes.
All right. So
here's my thing. So your position has changed and you're more in the – I'm unhappy with Gus too. And I think I would have a serious conversation about firing Rhett Lashley. I would. And I know he's Gus's guy and all that, but offensive coordination is his deal and the offense hasn't looked very coordinated 2 years now. And he's the quarterback's coach and the quarterbacks don't look very well coached to me at a lot of times last year and this year. So I don't have any problem putting that on him and saying that – you know, at the end of this year, we're going to evaluate his production and see what we do. But the idea that we're going to fire all these coaches tomorrow, you know, is insane. And so I think, you know, I think there are very specific deficiencies in this team that coaching or not, there are things that we now know about this team that are going to limit how good it can be. In terms of the talent that we have on the field. And I think Gus and them have to be better about adjusting the offense to that, but I think that's what it is. I mean, I think the offensive tackles are a weakness. And I think, you know, we like Chandler Cox, but he was terrible in that game on Saturday. And the idea that he is like Jay Prosh Jr. is a myth. Okay, if Jay Prosh was a 10 on the blocking scale, Chandler Cox is like 2.5.
Wow.
And so I'm talking about pass blocking, lead run blocking, everything. He's a versatile guy. He can run the ball a little bit and catch the ball, but he's not on the same planet as some of these other blockers we've had. Wow. So we don't have a tight end that can block. And whose fault is that? That's the offensive coaches that do the recruiting. The quarterback recruiting, we can go into that tonight. That's their fault. But at the same time, there is still a ton of talent on this team. And I think in the long run, you know, over the course of time, we'll be fine. I think a lot of this goes back to what we talked about in the offseason about two things. One, the Alabama thing, but also what I talked about before, like, this team is better than last year, but because we have played the toughest schedule in the country to this point, quantitatively tougher than Ole Miss's schedule, which, if, I mean, I could show you some statistical rankings that'll say it's tougher than Ole Miss, who's already played Alabama and Florida State, tougher than that, and so we're 1-2. And, it, you know, but the reality is we played really crappy in those games. We probably should have beat, you know, 2-1 at least. So anyhow, I agree with you. I'm unhappy. I was so unhappy after that game on Saturday night. I was so upset. I couldn't watch any more college football. But at the same time, like, the idea of firing them all tomorrow, to me, I think is silly. And I think you got to coach out the season, and I think probably even next season before you make a decision like that. And we could talk about the money and all the other stuff too, but
I want to make clear, I adore Gus Malzahn's offense. I love everything about it when it works. I haven't liked it the last 2 years. It is my favorite thing ever in college football, is watching Gus's offense when it's on a roll. 2010 in particular, you know, 2013 in a different way. It is the most exciting, fun thing about football I've ever seen when it works. And that's why I've defended him so much, because I want that. I want that around. I don't want to run off Gus, get rid of this awesome, fun, cool offense, and bring in somebody more along the lines of what we had in 2012, where we have a defensive head coach and some, you know, flash in the pan offensive coordinator from the NFL, and we turn into basically Les Miles, LSU going, you know, 8-4. Boring as crap, and just, you know, if, and I'll say this too, if we fire Gus and he winds up at the equivalent of Arkansas State again, I will be a fan of that school, and I will follow that school, and I'll root for that school. I'm just not confident. Let's do this. Let's have a parliament here, and let's have a no confidence confidence vote. Team, all right. The current coaching staff, Gus and his crew, yes or no confidence? John.
Yes.
No.
Wow.
They have not. They. If you look at the. This is the one that really took my feet out from under me. Kevin Sumlin has more SEC wins in Jordan Hare Stadium in the last 2.5 years than Auburn does, than Gus Malzahn does.
Oh, yeah. No, and this is the part where if you want to build a case, this is the case right here. Like, I don't think Terry Bowden ever had a stretch this bad.
No.
Have you seen – did you see the stat about the longest home losing streaks?
Yeah, we're ahead of this.
Yeah. It is not good.
No.
So,
I mean, look, I love Gus's offense, but I don't want to lose and lose and lose and lose while he tries to figure it out for 5 years. I've said all along, I mean, Woody Barrett's on the bench – maybe our high school quarterback that you refuse to let me talk about is out there. He may not be anymore after. I did see that he tweeted War Eagle before the game. I'm not sure if he was tweeting something else after that game. But I know that the future could be brighter. If Gus gets his head out of his rear end and we get Woody Barrett out there eventually when he's ready, or Joey, what is, I can't ever think of the kid's name. Joey Gatewood. Yeah. Woody Barrett and Joey Gatewood, they have the potential to make this offense work. The quarterbacks, every quarterback on the roster right now other than Woody Barrett, I have zero confidence in going forward.
Wow, zero. Even Sean?
Zero. No, I mean, Sean Mike could be a fine quarterback, but not the way they're playing him right now. Not the way they're playing him. I mean, he's more of like a, you know, I don't want to say Joe Montana like level, but well, I mean, he's more of a Doug Flutie, Joe Montana quarterback than he is a, you know.
He's like a really poor man's Ty Detmer kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And that's fine. You could win a lot of ball games with a quarterback like that. But not when he's doing nothing but throwing screen passes. And somebody put it really well. They said every time we were on 3rd and 10, he's throwing an 8-yard slant or something, 8-yard out.
Well,
that's
we
not
did
helpful.
We threw a lot of passes just short of the first down, which is on him and the receivers and the coaches. But the offensive, talking about confidence in the quarterbacks, we have two quarterbacks in the roster. I mean, until Woody Barrett's ready to play, and I think he definitely needs to play this season the way it's going. You have two quarterbacks in the roster you could play now. You could play Sean or you could play John Franklin. Mm-hmm. And to me, the key is if you play them, you have to go two completely different directions. It can't be the same offense with two guys. If we play Sean now, we need to play like a four wide receivers, throw the ball 40 times a game kind of offense.
Yes.
And spread him out and him throwing the ball down, not this at the stupid line of scrimmage crap, but down the field 10 yards a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we would be okay with that. Yeah. The other scenario is to play John Franklin III and basically run the, you know, the single wing or whatever. And we're, you know, handing off to Petway. We're running him. We're running reverses and that kind of stuff with end arounds. And Franklin keeping the ball and every once in a while chucking it way down the field when the defense falls asleep. I think those are the only two scenarios for this offense until theoretically Woody Barrett's ready to play and we throw him in there.
Well, Franklin was throwing the ball around pretty good there in the fourth quarter. I don't know if it was the defense was backing off, they were in prevent or whatever, but he was the only time he got stopped. Was when we got so predictable, just started running the handoff zone read, you know, thing every play. You know, we didn't throw the ball a lick that drive, and he got us down to like the 20, and then got sacked on fourth down. Right? You know, if we had kept doing the, if we'd mixed it up a little bit, like the second drive he had in the fourth quarter, he threw the ball really well. He completed some passes, and you know, we've got all these great freshman receivers. Just stick them out there. What the heck? Put him out there. What's the worst that could happen?
I agree.
Why not?
I'm 100% there. Like I love Marcus Davis. He's a senior. He's a good guy, but he's not having that Quan Bray season. He dropped two passes Sunday, and he is not aggressive as a punt returner. He's very safe, and he catches the ball and all that, but he's not trying to return it even when nobody's there, so I would replace him. I wouldn't play him at receiver, and I wouldn't play him back there either.
Put those young freshman receivers out there, plus the couple that are older.
I mean,
Hastings has been good, and
Slate.
And 83.
Ryan Davis.
No. The other one. You know, the tall, skinny one.
You're talking about Tony Stevens?
Yeah, Tony Stevens has been good.
Okay. He was good on Saturday.
Those guys out there, flood the field, spread the defense out, and then run the tenderizer up the middle. He was killing it. He was getting 10, 12 yards a carry when he wasn't getting stuffed at the line, when they put everybody up in the box.
But this was the thing I wanted to ask you. What happened to Gus that was so stubborn about running the ball? We used to bang our heads against the chairs.
Yeah.
He was so stubborn about it. He would not give up on running the ball. And now, like, Cameron Petway's running over them, and Gus just, like, forgets about him. I didn't understand that at all.
We did it last year with Javon Robinson.
Well, but Robinson was in the doghouse of stuff. This was a different deal. Like, Petway's, they love him.
Is it different? I mean,
it's 100% different.
But it's the same effect. It amounts to the same thing.
No.
It amounts to the same thing, which is in the third quarter, they don't know he's on the team. I don't care why. They just don't.
Well, you're talking about
in third quarters of close games, we just forget our good running back is on the team. I don't understand it.
That's fair. I mean, that's my thing is like we play on and some of this is that stupid early season Gus experimentation thing. We're playing too many guys and there's too many guys involved. We need to narrow it down to about four or five guys. We're like, we're going to ride with these guys. Everybody else sit over there and just wait your turn. And to me, like after Saturday, like I like carry on, but I'd sit him down and play Petway. And give Petway 30 carries a game.
Yeah. Yeah, I want Kerryon to have his touches, but, you know, it's like when Arkansas had the two backs. You ride the big McFadden train
as
you can, and you put the Lightning out there occasionally. He's great at scoring touchdowns and a broken field play and everything, but you don't run him up the middle. But, well, anyway, Call in Audible.
You want to go to questions?
Let me. I'm moving some stuff around. When do you want to do the most interesting coach in the world? He's waiting.
Is he related to this, or is?
Hey, we don't want to Google him right now. Let's do listener questions, and we'll bring him in after that.
Okay.
So I guess I need to push a button, don't I? Oh crap! I've lost control of this. Mark Richt has lost control of my soundboard.
It's time for listener questions.
Dun, dun, dun.
On the AU Wishbone podcast.
What we got?
All right. First question comes from Q Giddings. Mm-hmm. And a similar question asked by Matt Emerson and a few other people. Basically, do you think the miss on Jeremy Johnson derailed the last two seasons and possibly Gus's career?
Somebody called him the iceberg.
Yes.
Oh, man. I don't. Well, I'm going to go ahead and use that to answer if I remember correctly, there was another question about, like, why do we not have, you know, quarterbacks right now that can run Gus's system or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think it all kind of goes together. I mean, there's an argument to be made. There's a case to be made that he was such a can't miss that he was going to be the man through this year. And then by the time he's done, you bring in a sophomore, Woody Barrett, to take over. So JJ not working out has just thrown the whole thing into turmoil for 2 years now.
It's true.
Because we didn't really have a plan B. We've had several plan E's. You know, we went out and got one, and we had one already in Sean. And I just don't understand. I mean, I understand that Sean White turned out to be like the darling of the recruiting, you know, of the quarterback batch. You know, he went out and won the awards and everything. But what did Gus and Rhett see in him that said, this is the guy that needs to run our offense?
It's interesting. I'm going to go through our quarterback signees now since we're having this discussion. And it's interesting because they started to go through a phase where they got away from the dual threat thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So in 2012, we signed two quarterbacks. So this is before Gus was there. They just kind of laid the foundation for what they walked into. Zeke Pike and Jonathan Wallace. Given the situation they walked into, in 2013, they signed two quarterbacks, a JUCO signee, Nick Marshall, and Jeremy Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, they thought they were covered.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In 2014, we signed one quarterback, Sean White, who is ranked the 11th best overall quarterback in the country by 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
In 2015, we did not target Lamar Jackson.
Oh, this is the year where, oh, Lord. We had Gibson, that kid that was going to go to Tennessee, right? And he ended up Ohio State.
He ended up getting in legal trouble at Ohio State. He's having to sit out this season. The other two quarterbacks we went after were Kyler Murray and DeAndre Francois, who's now at Florida State. And Murray, you know what happened with him at A&M.
Yeah, he's at like Oklahoma now or something, right?
Yeah, he's sitting out his transfer year to Oklahoma. We signed one quarterback in that class, Tyler Queen, who was the 25th ranked quarterback in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a pro-style quarterback and not a dual-threat guy. Lamar Jackson was the 28th-ranked quarterback in the country.
Wow. So when people criticize us for not going after him harder, he was ranked lower than Tyler Queen.
On that, but a lot of people – but we should have gone after him. I mean, I think a lot of people – and I've heard people who saw him on camp at Auburn's camps, like Brian Matthews and – Jason Caldwell and other people say he was on campus. He looked great. He looked like a perfect fit for the offense, and they just didn't go hard after him. So that was clearly a mistake, and that's biting them in the butt now. And so that's all we got in 2015. In 2016, in this offseason, we talked to some JUCO guys, and you know, We talked to, there's a JUCO who's starting Virginia Tech now that we didn't sign. We signed John Franklin and we signed Woody Barrett. We also talked to a grad transfer named Davis Webb, who didn't come to Auburn, even though I kind of wanted him to. And he went to Cal, and Saturday night, well, after we went to sleep, he beat Texas and passed for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Cal beat Texas? I didn't even see that.
Yes.
Wow. I didn't.
So, again, that's another guy that – and the other guy that's out there, you know, you talked about your high school guy that is the future. To me, the guy that I would – you know, if theoretically, like assuming Gus and everybody's still around, Jarrett Stidham, the Baylor transfer, is out there. He's visited Auburn before. He's going to visit again. That's the guy that I think could step in and make a huge difference next year.
Okay.
This is a guy that's played in the Big 12 and, you know, went to Kansas State, threw for 400 yards, played in a big game against Oklahoma where they scored like 30, where Baylor scored like 35 points. So he can play. So.
Well, if our coaching staff hangs on this year, you can always recruit somebody like that by saying we got a great defense, we got a great kicking game, and we've got the best young receivers if they haven't all transferred by then in the country. You know, so come on in, you're what we need. You're the missing ingredient. You know, you'll drive the bus. So yeah, I mean, it's possible, I guess.
All right. We got a couple more questions. You ready?
Yeah.
We have a lot more, but next question comes from Auburn Elvis, who says, I was going to ask, what's the ceiling for this Auburn team? But I think I already know the answer. The ceiling for this Auburn team is winning every remaining game on the schedule. I truly believe that. However, I also believe that the floor for this team is losing 5 more games. So my question is, can Auburn fans be happy with a program that produces wildly inconsistent results, even if they occasionally or regularly include SEC championships? In short, do we value consistency more than championships? Which goes back to your longstanding Georgia
yes. argument. And my roller coaster graphic. Remember, if those that don't yes. know, I did a graphic showing how our win total every year going back to like 1980. And it looks like the Great American Scream Machine at Six Flags.
Mm-hmm.
There's no consistency at all. But no, I think Auburn doesn't mind riding the roller coaster. We just like to feel like there's a chance that we're going to be going back up. And we get kind of antsy when it's down, down, and there's no indication that it's going to go back up anytime soon.
All right. I'm going back and forth here between different things. We have a lot of email questions at auwishbone@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen those. Okay.
All right. First of those is from Theodore Roosevelt.
Wow, it's good. Came back from the dead to worry about Auburn football.
He's a fan, I guess. And he says, please change your intro back.
he doesn't like
the soccer intro, I guess.
Ready for some football? Who's ready for some football?
And he says, why is Auburn's line getting pushed around? We usually have a lot of talent. What's going on?
Okay, well, I change out the intro almost every episode now. I circulate through different things. And if you're listening now, you know I've changed it again just for this week. It never is going to stay the same. It's always going to be different stuff. Now, what was the other part?
Why is our line getting pushed around?
And
you have a lot of talent.
By the way, there was no way in the world I was going to play Who's Ready for Some Football after Saturday. That was not going to happen. The line. Tell me. I don't know, but I sure would like to know. What is the deal with that?
You're talking about the offensive line. I think the problem is tackle, really. We have two tackles, you know, Leff and Golson, and I think they're okay against the run. I think they're, you know, Leff, I think, is good against the run, but they're not good pass protectors. Again, like, people
– run.
Right, they're good for the run. They're bad at protecting the quarterback in the passing situation. And I think people don't think about Sean Coleman, but Sean Coleman was a really, really good player. Okay, he wasn't Greg Robinson, so people are like, well, it wasn't Greg Robinson, but Greg Robinson was one of the best offensive linemen we ever had. Sean Coleman is in the NFL, and he did a great job last year on Myles Garrett. And without him, you saw the problems we had. So I think the guys we have now, and again, I don't want to – we'll get to the LSU game later, but Arden Key for LSU is – his goal for this season is to break the SEC sack record. So we're going to be in this situation again if it's third long against LSU where we can't protect him. And I don't understand – you know, not only anybody understands the – you know, and Cole Kublik broke all the stuff down where we left the Miles Garrett unblocked, tried to pull a guard to get him and all that stuff, but – you know, there are things that people have done in football for 40 years where you bring extra guys over to help block really dangerous pass rushers, and we didn't do any of that kind of stuff. You know, you roll the quarterback away, you put the tight end or the fullback over there with him and help out, and we didn't do that stuff. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
There's something I want to mention.
The other thing I want to say about that is tackle is just like quarterback. There were some big-time recruits that we almost got that we didn't that are starting at other SEC schools now that would just be starting at Auburn, like that Martez Ivy guy at Florida.
That's right. That's right. It was very close. And I just wanted to point out, while we're talking about, you know, the offense and Gus's offense and what works and doesn't work, there was an excellent article I read earlier this week, and I can't tell you exactly where to find it, but you could probably Google and find it if you want to. But it was an article talking about Chip Kelly and how he's gone from being like the champagne toast of the NFL and Oregon to, you know, nothing he does works anymore. And it was really fascinating. They went down and got into the nitty-gritty of his offense and basically said everybody figured it out. And he's too stubborn to change it. And so he just keeps saying, well, we're going to do better. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And yet it just doesn't work anymore. And it's what got him fired at Philadelphia. And now wherever he is now, it's not working. Because
it was Chris Brown's article at The Ringer. Very good.
Yeah. And did you read that?
Oh, yeah. That was great.
That was fascinating, though.
But it was also scary.
Exactly, because it made me wonder about our offense. Is it that people have figured out, you know, you just send your big guy barreling into the transition point for the read option, and that brings it to a screeching halt, and Gus won't, you know, Gus has tried other things, obviously, but the things he's tried haven't worked any better.
I mean, we saw a team, you know, Florida State started doing, and other teams copied them where they had the nickel guy kind of in the slot rush at the quarterback, and other teams started doing that after we played them. And this thing, that isn't the issue. I mean, the issue with like that first play of the game, Miles Garrett, every other time this season and last year when we played them, Miles Garrett went inside on those plays and more toward the middle of the defensive line. And so we would have been in a position to block him if he had played that play like he had done earlier this year or last year. But they changed how they used him. And we weren't prepared for that. But to me, like, that's something that can only happen once. And then we don't do that again, but we did it again. That's right. The part where you're like, we're just being stupid. I got a bunch more good questions here.
Okay.
All right, next question comes from Earl, who's at Prowler01, who says, the offense is completely different with John Franklin III. The concern is his passing, but in 13, there were times when Nick Marshall barely threw. Do we just go back to the 13 plan?
No, because we don't have Trey Mason and
Greg Robinson and Jay Rosh
and Nick Marshall and all the whole crowd. I mean, when the pieces are lesser in that particular way, you're just not going to be able to do it.
That's right. Did we ever answer the JJ question all the way, the iceberg question?
I think so.
Okay. Our next question comes from Rusty Owens, who says, you've really got a lid on it, haven't you? What's your secret? Mellow jazz, bongo drums, huge bag of weed?
What?
It's the Tony Stark quote from Avengers, you know? When he's talking to Bruce Banner when they're on the helicarrier. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I guess.
I thought that was really funny.
Well, what was he referring to?
I think he's saying, like, we're not panicking. Or, right. What's our secret?
Smoke weed every day.
All right.
That is not our secret. I just want to go on.
No.
That is not our secret.
No. All right. Josh Corbett. Josh Corbett says, what do you see as the biggest issue for Auburn's offense this season?
The biggest issue for our offense? Where to begin?
As you can tell, our show ran really long this week, so I'm going to chop it up into several segments and publish each one separately. So we'll be back with part two and probably part three as this week goes along. War Eagle, everybody.